Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today we are talking with Sean Shepard, purchasing director at California-based retailer The Artistry. This conversation was recorded over the phone May 15th, 2023.
For your social use lounge. And I got to start off, like, are you guys finding that the industry is starting to evolve from a product's perspective so that it's accommodating for social use lounges? Or are you guys finding that people are still making the same old and kind of like social use lounges are figuring out a way to incorporate that into their business model?
Yeah, great question. I think we're still a little ahead of the game. I mean, you know, there's only really, I think right now, two lounges in all of Los Angeles, and I think ours is the only lounge that's really capable of a large amount of people. We have a capacity of about 80 people, and full restaurant as well. So I think that being that, you know, there's some in Palm Springs and a few up north, but there's not a huge amount of presence in the lounge environment right now. So I think there are not a ton of cannabis brands that are looking to innovate in that exact model, right? So we are still looking for a lot of experience-based products, things that are unique. A lot of cocktail-based products is very much something that we're looking for. And we did find a few things that piqued our interest.
Well, and when you guys are looking at kind of where to go for these types of products, obviously there's Hall of Flowers, which is kind of the premier in California for business to business. You have kind of consumer shows or award shows, kind of like the High Times or the Emerald Cup. When you guys are kind of deciding on where to source and how to source, how much goes into kind of going to these events and finding, you know, products from there versus kind of knowing connections within the industry and finding out new products that way?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that these events are very important for getting everyone in the industry together. They are a really great way for people to show their innovation and their quality. If their quality is absolutely fantastic. That being said, I mean, I probably get, no exaggeration, 200 plus emails a day from brands that are showing me everything that they have to offer, offering me to metric samples to my store. So at a certain point, I can almost look at whatever I want, when I want, and I've almost seen just about everything. Of course, it's very different to be able to meet people in person and get a vibe on the team, which I think is a very valuable glimpse into like how a brand does their business. Because having a good product is one thing, but understanding how to run a business well is a whole other thing that a lot of times, just because they have a great product doesn't mean they have good business practices. So going to the conventions, things like that, give you the opportunity to see a little more, you know,
get a little bit beyond just the product itself.
When you guys are
kind of looking at new brands and trying to decide what to onboard, I mean, obviously I know that you guys have your own, you know, your key metrics, that you have to meet. What are things that brands could possibly do to help pique interest within the industry? Is it the packaging? Is it making sure, say, that you absolutely have, obviously having fire is key.
Yes.
But what are some things that people should be doing with their brands that as they're coming on board to make sure that they could see somebody like you and stand out from the crowd?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't speak for every shop, but we are an art gallery, right? So aesthetic is very, very important to us. So, packaging should be beautiful. I do also have a strong feeling that if your packaging is overly masculine, you can deter a large percentage of the female, you know, smoking, you know, population just by having a really, really aggressive packaging. So we're always very cognitive of making sure that the packaging is beautiful. That's definitely something that we very heavily consider. You know, we typically try and stay away. A lot of packaging, you'd be surprised, is not as compliant as we would like it. So we don't typically take anything that has cartoon characters on it, or anything that could appeal to children in any way, which is something that a lot of clout brands still like to do, a very cartoony type of vibe. It's just not the aesthetic that we typically go for, and we feel that there's enough quality product in the market that fits the aesthetic of the artistry and an artistic type of vibe.
Well, and when you guys are kind of looking at types of products, obviously you want to make sure you have a large berth for all of the types of people that come into the store. A lot of conscientious consumers now looking at TERP profiles and things like that. How do you kind of balance your inventory in order to make sure that you have enough of each, say, category to meet kind of the totality of the consumer base?
Yeah. So that is a double-edged sword, because the word a lot is not as many as you'd think. An example that I use a lot of the time is, what would most people say? What do you think an average consumer that's coming in just looking for a vape cart, what do you think the average percentage of those people know what a terpene is? And like, when you really break it down, it's probably like 80 to 90% of the people that are walking in don't even know what a terpene is, probably don't even really know what a cannabinoid is. They know what THC is, they know what CBD is, but they don't really understand the difference between distillates and live resins or live rosins or cannabis derived terpenes or, you know, botanical terpenes. They're not really that into it. And, you know, people like me and you, we're really passionate about cannabis, but, you know, not everyone that is a consumer. And to be honest, the reality is the large majority are not as passionate about cannabis as you or I, right? And that's something as a retailer you need to be aware of, right? And an example I always use, because most of the time when I'm having these conversations, I'm having it with someone who's very passionate about cannabis. And I try to relate it to alcohol, because alcohol has been around for such a long time. I'm like, me and you, we're the single malt scotch guys. We're talking, you know, Macallan 18 year. We're talking these quality things. And the reality is Jack and Coke is served in every bar in America. Jack Daniels is the king, right? And so you can't turn your nose up at Jack Daniels just because you're a fan of single malt scotch, right? And especially if you're selling liquor. So for us, we need to understand that while we're very passionate about cannabis, and we will always have a very strong partnership with really good brands that put out quality product, we also need to understand that there are budget brands, and you know, that we bring on because they are looking for value, right? And the product is obviously still fantastic, but it's Jack Daniels, right? And there's nothing wrong. Jack Daniels is a great whiskey too, but it's also not Johnny Walker Blue Label, and that's fine. Johnny Walker has Red Label as well. And it's like, so there's a product for everyone. But I do think, while I would love for the government to require terpenes to be put on every package, if they had to put the top three terpene percentages, or even just the total terpene percentages, I think the consumer would become much more educated, and then every single product in the market would become higher quality, because every grower would sit down, they'd say, we have to start testing for terps, and we need to start pheno hunting for terps, and the quality of products would all become better, and the guest would become more educated, and they wouldn't become so obsessed with THC percentages, which is very, very prevalent, I believe, in today's market, is this obsession with just the highest THC possible, which unfortunately sometimes can lead people to distillate products or products that are very highly refined to get that really high THC percentage.
Right. And I mean, and it's an interesting point you make when you're equating it to alcohol, because, you know, there's a large price difference in premium tier cannabis products, and there's a large price difference in premium tier alcohol products. Obviously, Jack Daniels and Macallan are definitely not sold at the same price points. When you're looking at a cannabis brand, and you're trying to, as a retailer, say, break through that education barrier, if the government's not going to do it, obviously retailers, you know, you're the last bastion before the consumer makes the purchase. Is there a way that retailers can help educate consumers on what that value add is? Or, in, say, I mean, because you guys, obviously in West Hollywood especially, It's a, you know, it's a richer demographic. You know, they're used to paying higher tier price points. But for say retailers across the country, how could a retailer help educate consumers on a reason to pay a little bit more for say a higher premium product versus saying getting a basic distillate cart?
Yeah. So what I would say there is that that's where the partnership with the brands that you're working with really come into effect. Whereas like we would look at that scenario and say, look, we've created this incredible environment, this beautiful space, the artistry, this art gallery for a guest to come in and really have a fantastic experience. And now let's bring in the high quality brands to make that explanation sound. Because we can play telephone and I can have a brand come in and teach my team. And then I can have that, you know, my team, you know, regurgitate that. But then there's also the reality that no matter how great a team member is, they're on payroll and they're waiting to clock out, right? While they might be really passionate about cannabis. I was a bartender for a long time. And even the people I love to sit down and really break down terpene profiles for people, it takes a deep love to do that. And I'm not saying someone won't, but you can't put that as like, that's going to be the standard of what everyone at my shop is expected to do, especially if you're talking about a location like our Fresno location, which sees over 1,000 people a day. It's just not time-wise, it's just not really there. And then in addition, in California, most people know what they want. So a lot of people are not really, flower is the one category where people are still open to suggestion. They come in, give me a good sativa, give me a good indica, right? But basically in every other category, people are walking in and saying, do you have this brand? And so they're not necessarily always in the mindset to be like, hey, let me teach you a bunch of stuff right now. Like they're very much, there's a large percentage of the market that are treated, it's like a BevMo. They come in, they're like, this is what I want. Do you have it? Do you have this flavor? Do you have this strain? Great. Okay, cool. I'm going to buy it. Thanks. And they go about their day. So I think that's also something to consider.
Well, when you're looking at that mentality of, you know, THC being the end all be all in the consumer market's mind, how would you suggest, I mean, is it brand pop-ups, you know, cause I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's a way to reach the consumer before they go to the retailer, in order to get that education across, you know, in order to say, hey man, THC, it's not the driver of the boat. How would you suggest, cause obviously, you know, you being an expert in the field, I would love to hear, you know, ways that, people could help. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, it sounds crazy, but lobbying the government, like it making them understand that when you get latched onto, like there are two main, I mean, there's flavonoids as well. But when you're talking about the main things that create the high in cannabis is cannabinoids and terpenes, right? And the government's just kind of completely ignored terpenes. And I think it's something, again, like it's pushing people to really high THC products that are not always, you know, you take a really, we've had all these problems with people just getting THC products with terpenes that are not quality terpenes put in, you know, and getting not, you know, lung problems from it. So I think it's important to know like what the right terpenes are and what aren't. And they are making small changes on that. They did pass a law basically saying that you can't do fruit flavored terpenes anymore. So essentially you can do synthetic terpenes, like botanical terpenes, stuff like that, but the terpenes have to match a cannabis terpene profile. Like you can't just make it taste like some crazy flavor and then label it Fruit Loops or whatever. So there is signs that the government is willing to listen and learn. And I think obviously if you're not in a shop, like if you're just a brand, you're not in a shop, you just want to do good. Yeah, obviously actually getting involved on the government level would be great. If you're actually a vendor and you're in a retail location, getting a person in the store, I think is something that COVID really killed. after COVID basically shut down all in-store presence for brand reps. And I think a lot of brands over that 2.5 years got really, really comfortable with that lower labor cost of not having to pay for brand reps. And then when everything started to open back up, I think everyone got so used to not having brand reps that I don't think shops really were like, hey, let's get brand reps back in. And I don't think anyone's really started to realize that having a brand rep, especially the same brand rep, that's a really important detail. A lot of companies just want to hire some, you know, third party to do it for them. But if you have the same rep coming into a store and doing a patient appreciation day or guest appreciation day every week for like 6 hours, and they come in, they're not just like teaching the guests, they're also programming the bud tenders. Because for a lot of these bud tenders, like your brand is kind of just like a nameless, faceless entity, right? And maybe they meet a rep one time during a training for 5 to 10 minutes, they get a sample, but beyond that, there's no feeling behind the brand. But if you have a rep that comes in every week and they know their name and they're really cool, and maybe every once in a while they bring some donuts or whatever, and they build a rapport with the staff, and that is a really big tie-in to how the staff feels about a brand when someone's asked about it. Or, hey, what do you think about this brand? It's not some nameless, faceless entity anymore. It's that person that I know who had a great conversation with and made a joke and we laughed. And those little moments all add up, in addition to the fact that your brand may be on the shelf, but my team member is paid to sell everything on the shelf, right? Whereas if you're being offered to have a team member that works directly for you be on the sales floor, in my mind as a business person, it's like you're subleasing my sales floor for free. Like, I'm literally letting you sell on my sales floor and I'm not charging you anything for it. And the fact that people don't want to do that a lot of the times, simply because they're like, we don't have someone, which just means like you haven't put a budget aside for labor costs, is very strange to me. Because labor cost is, in terms of like having a salesperson that works directly for you and only is selling your brand on a sales floor, is incredibly valuable. So I think that for brands that are already in stores, getting the brand ambassador programs going again and hiring more reps to actually be in store is going to be a huge, huge factor. And not only customer education, like you said, but also customer loyalty.
Well, and that's an amazing take that I don't think a lot of people are considering, especially the fact that you have somebody in your store, you know, literally becoming part of your team almost to an extent, out there on mm-hmm. the floor, helping educate your consumers as well as your bud tenders themselves, you know, as they're going along. You brought up a really interesting point earlier too on synthetic cannabinoids and lobbying. Do you believe at certain point that the cannabis industry will reach, say, the FDA levels of requiring, say, synthetic terpenes versus organic terpenes being on labels? Do you, as a purchaser, obviously it's something that you take into consideration, but do you think that that is something that eventually regulators will take into consideration?
I mean, I don't know. I want to be transparent. I don't know. Federal legalization is a crazy animal that I don't even know if I could get into all the like things that are going to happen after the federal legalization goes down. I mean, there's so much in the banking industry that's going to go down, in the pharmaceutical industry that's going to go down. So like, I couldn't say exactly what will go down on regulation. I assume the first thing they're really, really going to crack down on is verbiage, you know, using terms. It is rampant. The use of the word live resin in products that are primarily distillate is rampant. So, you know, people just being very honest about if their product is, you know, how it's grown, defining indoor, outdoor, greenhouse. You know, I think there will be terminologies that are like, you can't say this anymore, right? But again, the timelines on that, you know, the government moves when the government feels like moving. So it could happen. It literally could happen the day federal legalization happens. It's like, hey, this is the rules, and they could just drop it on everyone, and everyone could be like, oh my God, we have to jump through all these hoops now. They could give a timeline. It could take 15 years. Like, it's with the government, you just never really know, unfortunately. Do I think it would be good for the market? It depends. You know, I always think that testing products and making sure that their quality is really important. I also think you need to regulate the testers, like whoever's, you know, the government needs to regulate testing facilities too, to make sure they're not on the take and, like, you know, doing things that are passing people that they shouldn't be passing. But on the flip side, I also think that there's a cost associated with that. And I think the government needs to be realistic about their tax rates when it comes to cannabis in regards to, like, alcohol and what they're taxing alcohol. And it's like, hey, if you believe in this thing and it's federally legal now, like, it should be treated with the same level of respect that alcohol is, considering it's been around in our country for just as long, if not longer. So, you know, I just think, granted, it wasn't legalized as long ago, so it doesn't have the same culture, but, you know, it's like, do you guys just want to tax everyone into oblivion, or do you want to actually try and start an industry here? So I think California has been struggling with that. I mean, there's so many cultivators that just can't make it because of just the taxes at this point are so astronomical, and the black market is rampant. The black market is alive and well, and it's all just missed tax dollars because there are so many people that are willing to take the risk because the taxes are so exorbitant. So I think that yes, the regulation could be good, but not at the cost of, like, hey, in addition to all these crazy taxes, now you have to pay an additional testing fee on top of what you were already doing. I think then once again, it's just going to kind of cripple the market and turn more people to the black market.
Yeah, well, with the legacy market and especially, like, you know, the rampant burner distros moving stuff out of state, are you hopeful that the BCC? I mean, obviously, personally, I think the BCC's big problem is they don't have anybody who was a grower themselves or who was in the cannabis industry as an operator on the regulatory board, making those decisions as somebody who had to go through those hoops. Do you think the BCC will eventually figure that out before the industry gets too damaged? I mean, I know a lot of these larger MSOs are kind of like rolling up in order to, you know, stave off that cost problem and a lot of these regulatory issues, opening up in other states in order to offset losses. But do you think that the BCC or that California as a whole will eventually start to lift up, say, smaller brands? I know that the whole move to try to get direct to farmer direct to consumer sales was one initiative. Do you think that they'll eventually figure this out?
Truthfully, I can't confidently say yes. Like, I just really can't. I think that the state government is their government, you know, and I wish that they would, and I really hope that they do. But would I be surprised if they don't? No, absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. I mean, I've heard stuff from brands that I've heard stuff in conversations of, like, the state government is just allowing tons of people to get grow licenses. So they build all the infrastructure, right? They build all the facilities, they build all the lights and the water stuff and the tubing and all that stuff, knowing that ultimately the market is oversaturated, right? And then they're like fine with taxing them until inevitably they go out of business, right? And then it becomes federally legal. This building sits empty for years, maybe, who knows how long. And then ultimately, maybe then when there's enough empty buildings, they go federally legal, and then pharmaceutical comes in, buys all the buildings, pennies on the dollar, you know. Granted, like, this is from, like, growers. This is what a lot of growers. So there's some cynicism in the industry of, like, where the government is at, because while I think that California state government is a great government compared to some other state governments, I do think they've given out way too many grow licenses. Like, all of those grow licenses were approved by the state, and there are way too many, and they should understand market saturation, and they're causing a lot of people to, they're causing a massive fluctuation of ebbs and flows because there's just way too many growers, and then that causes a bunch of them to go out of business, and then there's not enough growers, and it's like this big issue, and it's all because the state government really isn't regulating it well. Another big issue that's with the state government is that on a retail front, when most retail applications don't win their license, they just sue the state and they just sue the local city government. And because it's not federally legal, most of the time the city government just kowtows to it and just gives them a license. So I know, for example, Oxnard, the city of Oxnard initially wanted to give out 5 licenses and ended up getting sued by every single person that didn't win. And then they gave out 11 licenses. So they over doubled the amount of retail locations in their town. And it's like, you sat down, you looked at the city of Oxnard, you decided that 5 shops was enough to fill the needs of the town. And now what you've done is you've taken and you've over doubled that, which means now really, if all of these shops open, none of them can really sustain themselves, right? And so this is where I'm like, these are the failures of the state government. And granted, maybe they don't have the money to fight 12 lawsuits at the same time from multi-million dollar cannabis brands. And maybe when it goes federally legal, they'll have the support of the federal government and that will stop. But the state government hasn't really done much to support the city governments on this stance. So I don't know. I really don't. I hope maybe that the state government gets wise, and maybe there's someone who becomes the governor at some point that just understands cannabis, has a family member in cannabis or something, and just sees it from a different point of view. But if that doesn't happen, I don't have a lot of faith, unfortunately, in governments overall. But hopefully, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, my fingers are definitely crossed. At least in Los Angeles County, I know the DCR was kind of stacked against them when they initially started. I think they started with like, what, 3 or 4 employees for 14 million people. So like,
it's crazy.
Yeah, certain people were set up to fail. On a happier note, though, you guys are absolutely crushing it. And your social use lounge is fantastic in West Hollywood. When you're looking at the types of events that you guys throw, the one that I particularly remember was going to like a comedy night. When you guys are trying to figure out what you guys want to do in order to meet the consumer demand, do you guys do any consulting with, say, like, hey, we should have, say, these brands during these types of events? Or how do you kind of just structure the event space within the lounge?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is a new concept, right? So there's always a certain amount, I don't want to call it trial and error, because it's always well thought out, but there's always a certain amount of experimentation going on with new programming. And at the end of the day, you never really know how popular something is going to be or how engaging it's going to be until you give it a go. So yeah, we're always trying new things and gauging the excitement and the feedback on them and going from there. You know, we've definitely seen a lot of engagement from our burlesque shows. We do some great drag brunches that are really, really fun. We have puff and paint art classes that are really, really fun, where you smoke with the artists and then they teach you how to paint. A lot of really fun stuff. DJ sets are really, really big. We do a lot of listening parties. We had Flostradamus in on 420, did a really big DJ set, and then played Academy LA after that, which was really cool. And he had a fantastic time. So yeah, we do a lot of really, really, just engaging events. I think that while smoking cannabis is amazing, smoking cannabis in a lounge, we don't want it to just turn into a novelty, right? Most people smoke before they go to a restaurant anyways, or even in the parking lot before they walk in. So being high in a restaurant is not something new to people, right? And if you're smoking a joint, maybe it lasts for 10 minutes, but you're in the lounge for an hour and a half, right? So at a certain point, we want the experience to go beyond just smoking or just being high in a place, right? In a public environment. It's got to be engaging beyond that. So we have a really cool thing, you know, craft cannabis cocktails that are actually, you know, real craft product, no alcohol, of course, but yes, cannabis in them. We have, you know, the spinning student glass bongs. that you can rent all types of glassware and electronic dab rigs. We have a walk-up dab bar. So just a lot of like really engaging stuff that make people want to come back regularly rather than it become, oh, once in a blue moon, or if I have family in town, I'll take them there. It's like, no, this is a spot that you can come every Friday night, have a good time, listen to some live music, and be able to enjoy yourself with not always the typical alcohol vibe that LA has to offer.
Well, and you guys absolutely, I have to check out your Palest shows.
They're great, man. They're so fun.
When you're looking at brands, and I know I don't have you for too much longer, I appreciate the time that you've given me. But when you guys are looking at kind of the top tier brands that you guys have, is there a particular brand that kind of stands out amongst the rest in your mind? And if so, what would that brand be and why?
Yeah, well, we have two main partners in the lounge. Our main partners are 710 Labs and Connected and Alien Labs. Connected and Alien Labs are partner companies. I mean, they're both quality, you know, just top tier products, not just in the product quality, but just how they do everything. I have a saying I love, it's how you do anything is how you do everything. So I think that if you have a quality product, your quality product should be reflected in every single thing that you do. And those brands have proven to be that. Their product is incredible. I mean, they're terpenes, right? So when I go from like, oh, their products are incredible. Anyone who's really into cannabis, right? When you're talking about how incredible products, no one's like, their THC levels. It's always like, oh, the terps, man, the terps are so good, right? So with both of those brands, I would say just when you break open a jar of Alien Labs or you crack open a 710 rosin, just the terps and the terpene profiles are just so strong. It's just a really, really phenomenal product. And again, their level of engagement and the quality of everything that they do matches the artistry, which is why they made sense as partners for the lounge.
Absolutely love both of those brands. Alien Labs in particular, they're just the design aspect of everything that they do. It's just beautifully done packaging. And then 710 Labs with that electronic terp trash can.
So 710 is going to be, we're going to be doing an event with them during the Pride Parade on the 4th. So they're going to be taking over the third floor with Puffco. So they're going to be coming out with a bunch of cool stuff. I think some of their crew is going to come out. And then I know 710 or Connected and Alien Labs, we're going to be doing an event with them. I think like a strain drop, like a full takeover event with them as well, probably in the next 5 weeks or so. So I'll make sure to get you the information on that.
Hell yeah. And one last question for you, especially considering the amount of people that come to your spot in West Hollywood. I'm not sure if you have it on the menu, but do you guys offer flavor flights, or like, cause you had mentioned alcohol earlier, you know, kind of like doing a flight of different flavors. Do you guys offer that?
It is something. That's why I come to Hall of Flowers. So I'm looking for stuff like that. It's something that I would love to offer. It's very difficult sometimes because the government requires everything that is a different product to have its own barcode. So there's a process. We do have Candescent has a flight pack of pre-rolls where it's every single type of pre-roll that they offer, five different phenos, which is really, really cool. I want to get it done on the concentrate side. I'd love to be able to offer a little flight of buying, you know, 4/4 grams instead of 1 full gram, or, you know, instead of having to buy an eighth, you buy 4 different grams. We're definitely looking to offer something like that. It's really, really difficult with the legalities of it. And that's why we're always looking for people who can create a product like that and make sure it's compliant. So right now, no, we are not offering any sort of flight product. It is definitely something we would love to offer. If there's anyone out there who has a product like that, it's definitely something we would be interested in taking a look at.
Brands, definitely reach out to Sean over at The Artistry if you have any type of flight products. Right now, obviously, you guys are crushing it. You guys have a ton of amazing products. Last time that we had talked, you guys had mentioned you guys wanted to find like infuse sprinkles for like ice cream and stuff like that. Are you guys finding more niche products within the industry, or are people just avoiding those types of products?
You know, I think that people are, the industry very much goes in kind of cycles. I think right now the cycle is definitely the 1 gram rechargeable disposable. Is everyone's launching that, and it usually comes down to like China came out with a new technology and now China's pushing this new thing and then everyone decides to do it. But that was it. A few, like probably 6 months ago, it was the rosin cart. The rosin cart's definitely still a big thing, but it's very interesting when you go to these events, because everyone, they live in their worlds, right? And you go from place to place to place, and they all talk about their product like if they're the first one doing it or it's super unique, but you realize that, you know, that's not the case. So unfortunately, we weren't able to find exactly what we were like every little product like that. But again, it's because there's not a huge market for it on the retail front. And I totally understand that. The retail front and the lounge experience are two completely different things. It's like it's like a supermarket compared to a restaurant. That's literally how different they are. So I understand why certain brand, like most brands, are not making products for lounges. But what I will say is I think the products that are already in those categories need to start getting with it. So for example, any brand that just is a beverage brand that only has like 100 milligram ready to drink or something like that, while ready to drinks are great for like take home and for retail, taking a can and just pouring it over ice is not nearly as engaging as getting a craft cocktail, right? So any brand that I talk to that's like, we have a beverage. I'm like, do you have like a small shot version of it that's like 10 milligrams or even lower dose, like a 5 milligram or even some CBD ratio that we can pour into a craft cocktail and make a Mai Tai out of and make a real drink with like an actual shaker and a bartender, as opposed to just a already pre-batched cocktail in a can? It's not as exciting, right? So what I would say is the brands that are already in that space should innovate more to get into lounges, because lounges are going to be the place that drive the sale of like, oh, this is good, I should drink my cannabis. Most people don't even think about the idea of drinking their cannabis. So I think those brands that are already in the space should invest more in trying to build lounge programming, because inevitably lounges will be around. And I tell every brand this, I'm like, if you came in right now and said to me, here's some product I have where I can mix in, I have a turnkey bar program for you where I can come in once a week with a bartender, make these drinks for you. They'll come with custom cocktail cards that the guest can take home with them so they know how to make it at home. I'd be like, oh, let's do it. This is great. This is fantastic, right? But a lot of brands, once again, just haven't gotten to that level. So, and it's because the demand for lounges is not there yet. But I let them know, hey, if you get ahead of it, once all the lounges start to come, you're going to be the first one in the door. So I would heavily advise brands do that. In regards to big brands that are running, you know, 1 gram pre-rolls and flower, like stuff like that's really crazy amounts of volume, no, I don't think launching a beverage line is going to save your brand or, you know, do anything like that. So like, I do really, really love it when a brand stays in their lane and just knows what they're good at. We all know Wild, you know, Wild isn't trying to launch a vape cart, right? You know, well, they're not trying to launch a tincture. They know what they are. They do gummies. They do it very, very well. And they stick to what they know. I think sometimes brands can pigeonhole themselves by like trying to spread too wide, and then their sales reps are trying to pitch 7 categories, and I think all of it can kind of suffer slightly by spreading too thin. So typically I really do like to look for my flower from my flower brands, my vapes from my vape brands, and like my edibles from my edible brands. And I, if they're a really, really strong partner with us, I'll consider like, okay, you have another category, let's look at it, let's test it out at a shop or two and see how it goes. But yeah, for the most part, I really do look for that. And unfortunately, like I said before, there aren't too many beverage brands that are like doing that level of engagement right now.
Yeah, and there's very few brands that really diversify from their core product and actually win. I think one of the few that I can think of right off the top of my head is probably Papa and Barkley with Papa Select, you know, moving from the transdermals into the concentrate scene. But I think that Mary Jones, if you're listening, try to lower your dosage on your shot from 100 milligrams.
Oh yeah, I know, right? Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
Well, Sean, I look forward to seeing the collaborations that you guys have coming out in the coming weeks. Definitely send me the information. I will be there. And if brands want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to what's the best way to reach out?
Just reach out email. Yeah, email's the best. Info at the Artistry.
Awesome. Sean, really appreciate you. Really appreciate what the Artistry is doing, especially for the Los Angeles social scene. And look forward to seeing you at the next social use experience at the Artistry Lounge in West Hollywood.
We'd like to thank Sean for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about the Artistry by visiting them online at www.theartisttree.com. As always, thanks for listening and stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis.